From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of December, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Total Farm Marketing. She's in Hollister, Missouri. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, I'll bring you the final part of my interview with Frayne Olson about commodity agriculture and phase one. He has some thoughts about 2021 and how much and what types of products the Chinese might import. You'll want to stay with us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Jackie Vakes now joins us from Total Farm Marketing. Thanks, Jackie, for being here. Let's get started with support and resistance today.
March corn support 416, resistance 432. Now, we've seen March corn test the downtrend line both last month and this month, and it failed. And when I say that, I mean it tried to go up and go through the downtrend line, and it couldn't do it. And so May support 411, resistance 435, the crossover points 420. December, which is off of a weekly chart, 401 support, 419 resistance, and it currently is in a range. There's a channel, actually, with the low end of 406 and high end of 419. Crossover is at 462. We look at beans, January, 1102 support, $12 resistance. It also tested the downtrend line last month and this month and failed. So I think it's interesting that we saw that happen in March corn as well as in January beans. Crossovers at 977. March beans, 1107, 1205 with the crossover at 941. And May, 1041, $12 resistance and crossovers at 1093. We go out to November of next year, which is a weekly chart, 1036. And 1066 being the resistance. And there is currently an uptrend channel in November 21 on the weekly charts. The bottom end of the channel is at 1029 right now this week, and high end is 1091. We look at the Dow Jones Index, same as last week, 29,569 for support, 30,139 for resistance. Dollar Index, 87,81 support, 92,07 resistance. Managed money, kind of interesting, Todd. Well, soft red wheat went from being short last week, 8,000 contracts, to long, 23,000. And corn, long, 285,000 compared to 266 last week. Beans, long, 214 versus 187. Meal, 74 versus 61. And soy oil, long, 112 versus 110. So I guess this answers the question of, is the managed money and the funds going to fight to protect their long positions? I'd have to say yes. When we look at export inspections for this week, wheat is running 1% ahead of a year ago. It was 3% last week. And corn 65% ahead compared to 69 last week. And soybeans 72% ahead compared to 69 last week. And so export inspections are just going back and forth. It's almost like corn and beans are just trading places, you know, so it all depends upon who tenders when.
NOPA crush, domestic crush for soybean in the United States has been really good. Has it maintained that stance?
I'll tell you what, it is pretty doggone impressive. We set another record. Last month was a record of 185.2, so we didn't exactly... we didn't surpass that record this month. We came in at 181.01. But last year, we crushed 164.9. So this is a whopping change compared to then. We look at the stocks, 1.5 for soy oil. And last year, we were at 1.448. So just all that says is that they're actively crushing. There's no question about that. And the oil yield is really good this year. It's 11.63 gallons per bushel compared to 11.5 last year. So we've got a better quality product too. Those are all good things. You know, those just indicate that we continue to move forward.
I have a couple of livestock questions for you. The first one is the cattle on feed report, which is due out this week. What do you think about it?
Well, the estimates, Todd, for on feed are 100%. on December 1st, and placed in November, 91.5, and marketed 98.1. Those are you know, good numbers. Let's just put it that way. Especially the marketing number. That's always the issue when you look at it, because so right now, you know, the market is moving forward. We had a nice bounce in livestock today, and so you know, we're headed into the time of the year too where we do consume a pretty good amount of beef once we get past Christmas.
I want to switch species and nations now to hogs and China. Have they been able to rebuild the herd since ASF?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, we all know that African swine fever just ripped them apart during those past 2 years, you know, but they've recovered more than 90% of their normal levels by the end of November of this year. So, you know, that is really pretty amazing. And they expect that they're going to be fully recovered by the first half of 21. You know, over a year ago, they had lost about 40% of their herd. But the government came back in and really supported and subsidized, and they drove a really rapid recovery. They built a lot of new buildings. They stocked a lot of new farms, and all of it really outpaced anything that people were expecting, you know. So the interesting part is, though, that hog and pork prices are still really, really high over there. And the output that's coming so far, you know, it's just way short of what demand is. And so that's it. That's great. I mean, I wish we could see that kind of demand for beef over in China. that would make a big, well, they'd take everything we ever had if they really wanted to. But it's amazing that they can rebound the way that they have.
Yeah. So part of that, and I don't know whether we have confirmation on this or not, is that the genetics used to rebound so quickly in the livestock sector for hogs in particular means that their yield is lower and that they're likely to have more grain to feed those hogs. Do you think that's true?
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, I, you know, having been a feed analyst, I guess you'd have to say, you know, I did rations for years and years, and hogs were always great because they eat a lot of corn. And I think that that's part of what we're seeing. You know, we're just seeing that that's why the demand is continues to build out of China when it comes to corn, because as the herd grows, the demand just comes right along with it.
Now, let's turn our attention to South America. Anything in a way of an update on what crops look like there or what conditions might be for the soybeans, corn too, that is now in the ground?
Well, it's interesting. You know, CONAB, USDA didn't make any changes at all to production coming out of Brazil. And a lot of people were upset by that. You know, CONAB came out and said that they expect production is going to be 130.4 million tons this year. That's up 7.7% over last year. I mean, that's a record. And that's primarily because they expanded a lot of acreage. But CONAB also came out with a, you can't see the chart, but I'm going to try and describe what it looks like, a picture of what the weather may look like over the next three months, you know, and these are extremely important months, December, January, February down there. They had a lot of red on it, which indicates 50% or less of the normal rainfall. They titled it Probability of Precipitation for the Trimester of December 2020 through February 21. But the big thing that a person has to be concerned about, and I got this from Dr. Cordonnier, he just said a word of caution, Jackie. He said, in a normal year, most of those areas that are red get more rainfall than what's needed for a successful soybean crop. So if the average monthly rainfall is 12 inches or more for January, for example, half of that normal rainfall would still be 6 inches, and the soybean yields would probably still be okay. So it just depends upon how well distributed the rain is. And it's just like here in the States. It's no different. The timing of the rainfall is just going to be more important, actually, than the overall total amount. And so I went and I looked to see once, you know, virtually, where are they, you know, where are they at in terms of moisture levels? And the moisture levels would say that they can probably, you know, I mean, they have a terrible time holding moisture down there, but there's enough moisture around that they should do okay. Now, when you look at the export side of things, which is, what we've been trading a lot, they are virtually exhausted. They just, you know, I mean, beans are gone. And they figure they're going to import more than 1 million metric tons of soybeans to try and bridge the gap until harvest actually shows up in late January. But they think the majority of those beans are going to come out of Paraguay. And Doc had some great pictures. It's just the neatest thing. It's a photograph of what it looks like. The ships coming out of Brazil and going on, you know, into Asia and into Europe. And in April and in May, it was just almost like a continuous line of little green dots, just tons and tons of these little green dots. And on December 7th, he had a picture on there where there was basically no dots of any kind. So there were no vessels carrying soybeans out of Brazil at all. And so that's probably going to be the case until we get to the second half of February.
What do you see in Argentina?
You know, Argentina continues to struggle along. They're 47% planted on their corn. That's behind 50.8 is their average. But they moved up 12% last week. The core part, and this is always the key, just even in Brazil, the same thing. The core part is 85 to 95% planted. In other words, where the majority of the crop comes from. And so southern Argentina is planted at about 60 to 70%. There's absolutely nothing planted in far northern Argentina, which isn't real surprising. The soil moisture for the corn down there is rated at 19% short to very short and 81% favorable to optimum. Now, that's very different compared to what we kind of been hearing. You know, everybody's saying, oh, it's just so bad. It's so bad. But favorable to optimum percentage is down 7% from the week before compared to what it was last year. But it's still, when you look at last year's, the percentage right now of favorable to optimum was only 68%. So, you know, we're still 13% ahead of that. So I think we have to be very careful about betting the farm on the idea that South America is going to necessarily carry us and just keep on propelling us higher and higher.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thank you, Ted. I appreciate you too.
That's Jackie Vegg. She is with Total Farm Marketing. Hey, you know, yesterday afternoon we heard the first part of an interview that I had done with agricultural economist from North Dakota State Extension, Frain Olson, about the Phase 1 trade agreement with China and the impact it appears to have had on the 2020 export season, especially for soybeans and for corn as well. I asked him at the end of that interview to look forward into 2021. Here is his answer.
So I've actually tried to track that. The USDA does keep track of the value as well as volume, but the value of U.S. egg products entering China. They're always a couple months behind in reporting what actually has happened. But so we have information through October. So from January through October, the largest value, the product with the largest value was soybeans, which is what we saw also in 2017. The number two was actually pork. The amount of pork in 2017 that we shipped into China was rounding error. And now today it's about $1.4 billion, which is so they're number two on the list behind soybeans at about $7.8 billion. Number three for the 2020 numbers is cotton. And cotton was actually number two back in 2017. The fourth is grain sorghum. And again, the very similar numbers, grain sorghum shipments in 2017 versus 2020, very similar. But the one that probably impacts your listeners the most is corn. Corn is now listed as number five on the list. And in 2017, again, it was so far down, it was hardly worth counting. Poultry meat is number six. So the value of products that we're shipping, soybeans is still number one. And that's the one that I think everybody has this connection between U.S. agriculture and China. But pork, corn, and poultry have also benefited pretty substantially from this Phase 1 agreement.
And you think corn will be in a better position for next year?
I do. I do think that corn will be. Now, China is the second largest corn producer in the world, right behind the U.S. So they produce a lot of their own corn. And they consume almost all of it domestically. They have some pretty large corn reserves, but those corn reserves are starting to come down. You know, their government owned reserves, kind of like our old CCC grain reserve days. And they do sell some of those reserves in case there's a production problem. But if we look at the current forecast for corn consumption versus corn production in China, there's quite a deficit. And there's two ways you can make up that deficit. One is to try and import and import off the global market. And the second, of course, is to bring your reserves down. And China is actually doing some of both. And the current thought, at least in the marketplace, for both some of the USDA forecasts, but also some of the private forecasts for corn exports or the importation, the China's import appetite off the global market, as well as their reserves. Their reserves are forecasted to continue to come down over the next several years. And the forecast or the expectation is that they're going to import more corn off the global market. And the two to three places you can get, well, four countries you can get a lot of corn: US, Brazil, Argentina, and Ukraine. Those are the four largest corn exporters of the world. So it's not like China has to come to the US, but we are by far the largest supplier, have the largest quantities available into the global market. So I do think corn is going to be one of those benefit. I think grain sorghum will also be one of those crops that may benefit. Now, obviously, a much smaller crop in the U.S. But again, I do think we will export meat products directly into China as well. So some of our corn and soybean exports will go in the form of meat instead of bulk commodity.
And do the corn exports from the United States go out the PNW or do they go out New Orleans?
Most of it goes out of New Orleans. Most of it goes out of the Gulf. There is some that will travel out to PNW, but just because of the sheer volumes involved and being able to source the corn at the lowest price possible, coming out of New Orleans is actually a little bit more efficient for corn shipments. It's not impossible to get corn, obviously, from you know, the Dakotas here, for example, through the PNW, but the majority of flows through the Gulf. Now, the challenge is if you're going to go through the Gulf because of transit times, because of the shipment times that are required, it needs a little bit more lead time coming out of the Gulf versus the PNW.
That's Frayne Olson. He's with NDSU, North Dakota State University. He's an extension agricultural economist there. I talked with him on Monday, December the 14th. On this Wednesday, we're joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Thanks, Drew, for being here. A little dusting of snow, kind of cool. Outside the home here in Kansas City, did you get more snow than that?
Oh, no. No, we're still waiting for winter here. We've had some chills, but that's about it. I think we had some snow in October, come to think of it. Maybe you had a dusting to an inch and a half or something, but that's been it.
Before we get to South America and some of the growing regions, the East Coast, what's it look like as this system moves that way?
Yeah, a pretty big mess. The mountains of Pennsylvania looks like they're going to get 1 to 2 feet of snow. It's going to be very aggressive for that area. But on the coast, probably looking at 4 to 10 inches, I would say. A lot of it's probably going to be in the 5 to 8 or 9 inch range. But certainly going to be a significant storm, the first biggie of the year. And so that's always a bit of an issue for travel and all that good stuff. So definitely going to be a potent little system. Wouldn't surprise me to see some areas in southern New England come in with maybe upwards to a foot of snow.
Wowza, that's a lot of precip. A foot of snow is not that much precip, I suppose, but that's a lot of snow on the ground. How about that? On the flip side, if we go to South America, Argentina would love not to have snowfall, but they'd like to have an inch or an inch and a half or 3 inches of rain, I would think. How are they doing this week?
Yeah. If they could get 3 inches, those people would be out of control, I think, especially if it was broad-based. But we do not have anything quite that luxurious coming up, but there will be rain across most of Argentina on Friday into early Saturday. And the computer forecast models today backed off on some of the intensity of that event, but that was necessary. We're going to be left with about 0.4 of an inch to an inch and a half of moisture across a big part of Argentina on Friday into early Saturday. And there will be some local totals that will go up to about 2.25 inches. Now, those greater amounts are going to be rather random and just not well distributed enough to really help the crops in a major way. But the topsoil in most of Western Argentina today is running very short on moisture. Subsoil is rated short. This is from La Pampa northward to Santiago del Estero. It does include the most important province of Cordoba. And so this rain event that's supposed to occur on Friday is extremely important for those areas because it's not going to rain again for 7 days after this event, and we will see temperatures back into the 90s. So it is very, very important. Now, there's some areas in Buenos Aires that won't get so much rain, and they too will be drying down. But Buenos Aires is focusing more on their winter wheat crop right now. Both wheat and barley are maturing and being harvested. I think they're about 60% done on the wheat crop, I believe. So they really don't want to have a lot of rain there for right now. They want to get that wheat out of there, and then they can finish up with the late corn planting and all that good stuff. So they're probably, even though they're cautious about saying they don't want the rain, they'll certainly benefit from a little less moisture there for a little while. And the next opportunity for rain in Argentina is probably in the last days of December. So it'll be a long ways out before they get another good chance for moisture.
One of the most important export elevators in South America is into Argentina. I take it river flows are really low at this point, and they're still having some difficulties. You don't see any change in that, do you?
No. The Paraná River coming out of Brazil will probably see some slow rise as we get into January. Maybe in the last days of December, but I don't think that we're going to get quite enough rain in a broad enough based area to really induce a serious change there. And for Argentina, we're definitely not. No, there's no good rains. The only area that's been seeing good rain in Argentina has been up in the northeast part of the nation, and that area isn't excessively wet. It's just normally moist is about the best way to put it for right now.
Now, many of the growing areas in Brazil, especially the center west, have been getting some rainfall. I think here in the United States, we might call it spotty, but the rains are bigger than that in Brazil. What do you make of those?
Well, I would term it as erratic rains here recently. Last weekend, we did okay in Mato Grosso. That's their biggest soybean producing state. But it didn't rain very well in Goiás, which is rather important too, and right next door. And so there are some areas that are doing good and some not. Now, Mato Grosso is done with rain for this week. They won't see any good precipitation again until the early part of next week, outside of an isolated shower or two. So we're still going to be watching that pretty closely. But I'm not terribly concerned about it because they do have good moisture in the soil in many areas today, even though they'll dry down through the weekend. And then starting next week and going on into the last days of December, there's going to be a regular occurrence of rainfall. So I think we've turned the corner in Brazil or are in the process of doing that. And so most of the country is going to see a more routine, more typical La Nina biased weather pattern as we move forward through the next few weeks. That may leave Rio Grande do Sul with a little less than normal rainfall as we move forward in time. But for right now, they're doing fine.
Are there any other places we should check in on?
Well, I think the in hard red winter wheat country, we've done really well with a couple of snow events this week and last week. The moisture profile is trying to improve. Now, northwest Kansas has not done well. We do have some snow on the ground across that area right now. In fact, most of hard red winter wheat country does have snow on the ground. And we've seen enough precipitation in the last couple of weeks to actually boost the 30-day percent of normal above average in the southwest part of Kansas and in a few counties in northwestern Oklahoma. But the northwestern hard red winter wheat areas are still lacking moisture, even though they've got snow on the ground right now. And this is the end of their precipitation biased pattern for a while. So for the next 10 days to probably 2 weeks, they'll go back into a dry weather mode. So we've kind of fixed a few spots out there, but we still have a ways to go on that. And I could say more or less the same thing about Russia's southern region. They haven't done as well with precipitation here recently. with their dryness problem still prevailing. They will get a chance for a little bit of light snow once in a while in the next week to 10 days, but it's cold over there and crops are dormant, so we can't do any fixing until we get to spring.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Drew.
All right, you have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.